So, good afternoon, everyone. The title of my talk is The Worst Case Scenario. And I had no idea when I gave this talk this title how ironic it would be, because when I pulled my book bag out of the car when I got here, I thought, this is feeling kind of light to me, and I left my talk at home. I got to tell you, I was not happy. And so Charles was getting out of his car at the same time, and I said, you know, I'd really wanted to read this passage from Muji, this Advaita teacher that I have been liking. And Charles just, he says, I just happen to have it in my car. So here it is. So I came in and just kind of scribble some things down to see if I could retrieve this talk from my failing memory. And then I just settled into the meditation and practiced with this. So, you know, here's the contents and awareness, which is, well, damn. That's what's in the contents of my awareness. And I said, well, what knows damn? What knows unhappiness? And how is this presence, this consciousness, this awareness, this being relating to this unhappiness? And he just wasn't having any problem with it at all. He was just fine with it. Somebody recently asked me, how do you decompress from just listening to what you listen to all day? And I know there's some other therapists in the room, and I'd be interested in y'all's answers too. And I said, well, you know, the conventional answer is, well, you know, I walk and I exercise and I play some music and I eat with friends and I watch Netflix. And, you know, I said, but the real answer is, when I'm sitting with clients and we're kind of just stepping back and dropping into this presence that is holding us and everything that's here, I said, at the end of the day, there is just this joyful contentment because I have been hanging out in this space of unconditional friendliness, unconditional presence, unconditional happiness. It's a happiness apart from, holds the, usually the suffering to which I have been listening. I want to read you this little passage from Muji. I can't remember where it was. Yeah, this is it. The world encourages us to look from the limited sense of personhood. Our personhood is just, you know, oh, I forgot my talk, and I'm the talker. I'm supposed to have a talk. That's what the personhood does. And it's a very unstable standpoint from which we're always trying to find balance on very shaky ground. But you must learn to look from your source being, capital B. That's this presence I'm talking about. Your being is vaster than sky, greater than space, and it's already here. Look from your stillness, not from your agitation. Well, that's a word to the wise. You don't have to go even a fraction of an inch away from where you are right now to find the silence and the stillness of your being. And from here, you can observe the energetic streams that are pulling your attention to go out into the field of noise and personhood, where beings are suffering from person poison from the toxicity of the ego. You picked up this book and some power within you has brought you to find something deeper than you have found so far. And it's so simple. Begin by looking from the place of your stillness. It's already here. Don't combine yourself with any mode of time or any concept. And immediately you will find yourself in a realm of neutrality, of spaciousness and silence. Even if the tree of the mind is shaking furiously, that movement is watched from the place of stillness. What a great image, the tree of the mind shaking furiously. And that's being watched from a place of stillness. I had a client this week text me and say, I'm going to be late to our session, if I make it at all, because my five-year-old is having a meltdown at school as I drop him off at school. Some of you will know the place of children's meltdown. And she was able to resolve it, and she made her way there, and she walked in and she said, "Good God." She said, "I'm just so furious at him," because this is not a kind of one-off, one-time thing, but it's a real persistent pattern. And she said, "I'm just so furious. You know, first, his shoes were too tight, and we had to get the shoes right. And then his hands were too cold, and he wanted mittens in May. And then his coat was too long. He wanted his shirt to show." And it was just, I was reminded of Goldilocks and the Three Bears, you know. It was like, you know, this too hot, this too cold. And so we were kind of just being present together to her fury. And then, as so often the case, what's behind that fury? It's kind of armoring for something else, and the something else for her was her fear of, "I just don't know whether I'm going to be able to mother this child. I really don't know whether I can do this." You know, so we were just kind of hanging out with that. And then what was really down there, and she just silently began to weep. She said, "I'm just so sad about all this. Just so sad about all this." And here was this grief that just began to pour out of her. I know a lot about the space of grieving. And one of the things that I've learned out of my own experience is there's grieving as feeling. And then there is the awareness, the presence that is holding this grieving. And that awareness, that presence, is not itself grieving. And so, as I've said in a couple of recent talks, the first move, of course, for all of us is just to validate. Here's this fury, you know, here's this fear, and then here's this sadness. And just, that's what's in consciousness right now. But after that, we don't have to stay nailed to that spot. We can actually take a step back into this presence that is just holding this grieving. So there's personhood, there's my personality, what's working for me today and what's not working for me today. And then there's this presence that is holding everything. After we had shared some of this space, I said, "Let's try something." I said, I want you to imagine that what's going on between you and your son is just up here on the stage, like up here on this stage. And you know, here's the just the drama of it all. And one of her her child's favorite lines is, "I'm not having it." You know, "I'm not having it." And she said, "I know where he picked up that line. He learned that from his parents. You know, like hoist by your own petard, as Shakespeare would say. I'm not having it." So he was in this not having it place, and she was in this not having it place, and both of them were melting down, and she really did not feel good about how she handled this in retrospect. So I said, "Let's just be up there, you know, on the stage with the drama of this." And I said, "I want you to invite you to do kind of a Woody Allen move, which is to kind of separate yourself and just go sit out in the audience." So the drama is still going on up here on the stage, but now there's this witness out here in the audience. And this witnessing has a capacity to inquire about what's going on. And the witness can ask questions like, "Who's mad here? Who's furious? Who's fearful? Who's sad? How is presence itself, capital P presence, how is it relating to this whole meltdown, my child's and mine? How is it with this?" And at the end of our conversation, she said, "You know, this is really kind of amazing because we started, and I was just in a just such a bad space, and I'm still worried about how this is going to play out in my son's life, in my life. But for right now, it's better." So it got me to thinking about this habit that we have as human beings to wonder, what's next? Well, okay, we got through this moment. You know, we got through this meltdown. But what's next? What's going to come out of this? And there's something in this Muji book, which is the gift that I want to give you today. And it's his teaching around the worst case scenario. And what he says is very simple. He says, so let's say you've got worrying thoughts. You've just got a persistent thought that will not let go of you. And it just comes up again and again and again. Or it might be here for a while, it might go away for a while, but then it's like the zombies, you know, it just comes back again. And he said, with these kinds of thoughts, it really doesn't work to just kind of step back into presence and say, well, you know, how's presence relating to this? Because you're just doing it over and over and over again. And there's this sense kind of a stasis. He said, but go ahead and push this thought to its logical extreme and ask, what is the worst case scenario of this thought if you push it to the end? Right? And I didn't do this with this mother because there wasn't time, and we can do it another time. But we could have asked together, so what's the worst case scenario here? Right. This child doesn't grow out of this. It doesn't get better. I mean, you know, there are just things in this life that don't get better. So can you let, this is not getting better, can you let that look back at the presence that you are? And how is this presence holding? Doesn't look like it's getting better. Do y'all remember this thing that came out, I don't know, maybe it was a decade ago, maybe longer than that, called the Worst Case Scenario Handbook? Do y'all remember this? So it was this book that said, Here's what you can do if you find yourself stuck in quicksand. This is how you get out of quicksand. This is how you fend off a shark attack. And I'm not kidding. I mean, they're these survival guys like Bear Grylls, you know him, on the Discovery Channel. My child, when he was an adolescent, just loved to watch this Bear Grylls stuff. What do you do if you're in a taxi and a baby needs to be delivered? Today it would be the Uber. What if you do in the Uber if a baby needs to be delivered? What if you need to perform a tracheotomy? You know, and just question after that. And they say at the end of the book, this is in a PDF. You can Google this thing, the worst case scenario handbook, and you just read the whole thing on your computer. So, I could barely put the thing down to write this talk. Maybe that was my problem. One of the things the authors say is, just carry this thing around in your glove box, you know, in your glove compartment. So you've always got it in case you get into one of these things. You know, one of them is, what if your car goes off the bridge and falls into water? Another one was, what if your parachute fails to open? I really don't know what you would do if your parachute failed to open. So I have my own version of this story. So I told y'all a couple of weeks ago how I had this misadventure with this metal Garden Buddha statue, how I turned this thing over on my ankle, and how the enlightenment spike that's coming out of its head made contact with my ankle. And so, you know, that was 2 weeks ago. It was Easter Sunday. And so 2 weeks later, the swelling hadn't gone down, and there was a kind of redness that was developing. I'm looking at the nurses here in the room. And on Saturday night, I got to worry, and I thought, you know, this is really hurting me, and I've been taking this medicine, and this isn't getting any better. I really don't want to go to the ER on a Saturday night. So I think I'm going to carry myself over to the urgent care place, which is just up here off of Hillsborough Road. So I rolled into the urgent care place about 7 o'clock. They're supposed to close at 8. And there are 4 other people who are already ahead of me. And they said, well, we think you can work. We can work you in. There's a woman who had fallen off a deck, and she was worried that she'd broken her leg. And then there was a guy who had some bad rash, and his girlfriend was taking care of him. And then there was a little girl, and I don't know what her deal was, but her mom was with her. And then there was this woman who came in, and I mean, she could just barely walk in, and she was just laying on the chair there. So this is my community for this Saturday night date I'm having. And usually, I mean, talk about having it in the glove box. I always travel with a book. It's like have book, will travel. So I kind of occupy myself in these doctor's offices with a book. Well, I hadn't brought my book. So it's like, oh, well, okay, what are you going to do with yourself? And I thought, I'll just sit. You know, I'll just sit. And there's this chatter going on with these people in this waiting room. And so I was just sitting, and I thought, okay, here's the worst case scenario. What's the worst case scenario that can happen with this injury of my foot? And I've got, you know what pitting edema is? Pitting edema is when there's swelling and you push down in it, but the skin doesn't come back up, and it's really not a good sign. So I thought, I've got this pitting edema that's going on. I've got this redness from this place where the Buddha statue attacked me. And well, what's the worst thing that could happen? I thought, well, maybe I've got an infection, you know, some kind of MRSA thing that they're not going to be able to cure. And maybe I'm going to get gangrene and they're going to have to amputate my foot. And I just burst out laughing at that. I thought, these people probably don't know what's going on over here with me, but I just burst out laughing at that. Now, this gangrene amputation thing actually comes from a memory, because when I was a student in college, I had a summer job as an OR tech at the old St. Thomas Hospital. And one of the things that I would do is I would carry these gangrenous amputated limbs down the hall to the lab. Right? So I had some experience with this. I mean, this is something that happens to human beings. So that was my worst case scenario. So I made it in to talk to the nurse, and she said, "So, tell me how this happened." And I said, "Well, this is kind of embarrassing, but this Buddha fell over on me." And she looked at me like, "Really?" And so she's typing in her medical record, and she says, "Garden gnome fell over on patient." And I said to her, "Is this going to be a part of my permanent record?" So we had a good laugh about it, and she gave me some antibiotics and said to come back if it wasn't any better. So my orthopedic adventures just kept coming. So the next day I was supposed to go back to TOA to have them take a look at my knee again, because I'd had this this knee MRI, and so it turned out there's a tear in the meniscus, and they're going to operate it on Friday. But the surgeon said, "Now this can go one of two ways. One is the routine way, where we just, you know, it's just kind of routine deal, and you're up and just kind of hobbling around." He said, "But it may be, we can't tell here from this MRI, but it looks like you might have a problem with the bone. And if we have that, we're going to have to do these microfractures. And then you're going to have to be not weight bearing for 6 weeks, and you're going to be on crutches." And I said, "Well, let's go with the routine plan. You know, let's go that way." So then after that, it's like, well, okay, worst case scenario. You know, I'm just working my program here. What's the worst case scenario? And I thought, well, okay. So you're on crutches for 6 weeks. How's presence relating to that? And it just doesn't have any problem with it at all. Now, me as a personality, you know, from the standpoint of personhood has preferences, you know, and it has fears. And I do want you to remember this from the talk. It's like, if you got obsessional thoughts, just go ahead and run them out to their logical end. Even if it, you know, just seems crazy to you. Because it will actually, I guarantee, it will stop the thoughts as long as you ask, how is being, capital B, relating to this? So I want you to get a little bit of a hit of this. And that is, I want you to feel into being in your body right now. And probably a pretty good place to do this is with your hands. So you can do this with your eyes open. But you can just be aware of sensations in your hands. The yoga teachers say, feel your hands from the bones outwards. So just feel into your hands, and you may notice there's some tingling. Okay? There's some tingling. Some sense of aliveness. You know, that you don't have a nerve block. You can feel your hands here. You can feel where they're resting or whether they're up in the air. You know that they're alive. Right? That's chi. That's being. We say in teaching Qigong that as air is to birds, as fish is to water, so qi is to all things. It's that in which we live and move and have our being. That's presence. That's where being has us. So at any moment, we can take this step back from personhood into being, into presence. And again, I offer this to you as kind of a tool for your toolbox. Just at any random moment in the day, you can just say, let's tune into being. This physical sensation of being, the tingling of aliveness in your body. And you can ask, how is being relating to this moment? Whatever the moment is, good, bad, indifferent. It provides a space on which the drama of your life can play out, and you're witnessing it from the audience. There is some step back you're witnessing, and then you can ask these questions of inquiry, which is just, you know, who's hurting? Who's scared? Fill in the blank with your question. I was talking to somebody today, and I just love this story, and I said, can I use this in my Dharma talk tonight? And he said, yeah. So he was a white guy about my age, and he was talking with an African American woman, a friend of his. This was when he was an adolescent, and she had been to a B.B. King concert. And so he saw her the next day, and he said, "How was the concert?" And she said, "It was great. It was great." And then she said, "That man knows hurt." And her conversational companion said, "That man knows hurt." And she said, "Only way you can sing like that is to know hurt." So there's hurt. And we can step back and witness this hurt. Our hurt, the hurt of the world. It said that Kuan Yin hears the cries of the world. We can witness this hurt and we can ask, and so is how is being, how is presence? We could say, how is God? Relating to this hurt. Somebody emailed me this last week and said, could you talk about what is going on in the Korean Peninsula right now? And just help me with my terror that, you know, 25 million people in Korea and Japan might just go up in the fireball. And she went on to say, she said, I've been listening to some national Dharma teachers, and I've just been waiting for them to address this issue or any number of issues like this. And she said, I'm really frustrated. They don't hear anybody talking about this. And I emailed back and I said, I'll think about this. And so I was thinking about it. You know, people up here in this chair don't have any special wisdom about these geopolitical quandaries in which we find ourselves. I mean, there are these clear-eyed people like Dr. King, like Thomas Merton. Reinhold Niebuhr was a Reformed Protestant theologian who really helped FDR and America get our heads around the magnitude of the evil that was happening in Europe and what we were going to have to do to come out of our America First isolationism and address what was going on over there. You know, I don't have that kind of insight. I've had people say to me here, I want you to be speaking more about what's going on in our culture right now. And I have people who have said to me here, I want you to be speaking less about what's going on in our culture right now because I come here for a refuge. That's what you get the big bucks for. My contemporary clergy friends are retiring now, and many of them, if they can, if their pension funds allow it, are taking early retirement. because they have been caught in the crosshairs of the culture wars and of things around which people feel really strongly and differently. And they're exhausted from it. They have just been eaten alive from that. We have so little control over so many things in our life. I like this little image. Here's my circle of concern. It's big. I got a lot of things I'm concerned about. Here's my circle of control. You know, it's just tiny. And what's going on in the Korean Peninsula, you know, I really have like zippo control about. And I have some terror about that. My father was a Navy surgeon in Korea when I was born. He was there for the first 9 months of my life. And I have some of his artwork, his artifacts that he brought back from Korea. It's in my home. And I've never been to Korea myself. But there's some kind of connection that I feel. So worst case scenario, right? I mean, this is really worst case scenario. Two impulsive people send off the missiles. So here's terror or fear. And that's what's in awareness. That's what's up on the stage. And actually, this time that we're in is more dangerous than the Cuban Missile Crisis. Because of the immediacy of our ability to communicate, we can do things so much more quickly. And that actually makes the situation more fraught than it was in the 1960s. So the trigger is even more of a hair trigger. So here's terror, all right? What happens when we say this is the worst case scenario, and how is presence, how is being relating to this terror? How's being relating to the possibility of the magnitude of this kind of hurt, which is really beyond our comprehension? How's being related to this? And you have to answer that question, you know, for yourself. When I put that question to myself, I reconcile myself to the possibility that this is the kind of thing that can happen in a world which is not stable, never was, never will be. This is the kind of thing that can happen. It does not help me or the world if I keep working this terror and going more and more deeply into it and more entangled in it. I really did that in the aftermath of Kathy's death. I kept working so hard with my anxiety and my depression that I actually tangled myself up even more fully in it. And I didn't at that point have the wisdom to step back into presence and be with that desperation that I felt during that time from this place of presence. The two things that have been essential to my recovery have been ECT and this step back into presence. That's why I said a couple of months ago, this is the only thing I want to teach for the next 5 years. Because I think it is the most important thing. And if you can catch this, for yourself, whatever the hurt of your life is. Nobody can sing like this without knowing hurt. Whatever the hurts of your own life are, you will hold them in a different way. Last thing. The person who wrote me about Korea said, here's what's really helping me. And she sent me a link to a PBS clip on this Israeli violin maker. Any of y'all see this? This Israeli violin maker who has been retrieving violins that were played in Mauthausen and Auschwitz, the concentration camps. Because, you know, one of the things that the Nazis did was they had these orchestras. And one of the ways that you could survive is if you could play an instrument, then they put you to work. You still were abused like everybody else, but you were alive. And so he's taking apart these violins, and he opens up one of these violins, and you know how there are those little holes in the wood of the violin? And he said, you see all this soot in here? You see these ashes? These are the ashes from the crematoria. And so what he's doing is he's restoring these violins to pristine condition. And many of these violins had exquisite inlay. One particular one had five stars of David around its circumference. And the clip ends, go home and Google Violins of Hope, PBS, and this clip will come up. And the clip ends with the Cleveland Orchestra using all these violins that this man had restored to be heard again, to play again. These violins know how to sing. They know what it's like to be hurt. Presence always sings. That's what presence does. It sings. It will sing you all the way through your life. And you will be deeply, deeply, deeply okay. Because everything's okay there. It really is. So we'll sit for a moment. So we send our wishes of loving kindness and compassion to one another, to everyone around you. So just feel into the aliveness of your own being. And in your own way, in your own words, as you make contact with that, simply let it ripple out from your body into the ripples coming from the other bodies in this room. You know how raindrops on a body of water, their ripples will intermingle. Let your wishes of loving kindness and compassion intermingle here in this space. These wishes of may you be safe, may you be healthy, may you be happy, may you be free. And these ripples go out to everyone we love in our lives. All strangers. To people who scare us, who challenge us, who are difficult for us. To all beings in form and all formless beings, all spiritual beings. May all beings be safe. May all beings be healthy. May all beings be happy. May all beings be free. We dedicate the merit of our practice this afternoon to the welfare of all beings, to the ending of suffering and the arising of joy and happiness and peace. So I've got a couple of announcements. Christy Robinson has been putting together our Dharma Friends groups. Said that Thursday morning, tomorrow morning, the 10:30 group will meet at Whole Foods, and apparently there's a place upstairs. It's not the permanent location where that group is going to meet, but that group will meet at 10:30 tomorrow at Whole Foods, and then there's an evening group. Which Peter is kind of helping to organize, and he's not here tonight. So that group is going to meet after this sitting next Wednesday. So those are two groups that are going on. Rami Shapiro and I will be leading a One River Wisdom School retreat the first weekend in July. And we're going to be, you know, working this territory of presence and being and I amness and I'd really like for y'all to come on this retreat. I'll just lay it out there. So it would be great to have you. So I hope you have a wonderful week. Thank you for your kind attention, for your generosity in the baskets and back, and see you next week.
Testing. Can I have your attention for a minute? I have an opportunity for any of the women here that have ever thought about going to Spain and hiking the Camino de Santiago, the Way of St. James. Liz Trinkler, who's one of the members of our Sangha, is leading a group of women going over there in September, and they need a few more women to join the group. There's a flyer in the back. I have more here, and I also have her contact information. I'll be glad to answer any questions. If anyone has ever thought about doing this, don't miss this opportunity. She is the best trek leader. I did it with her last year, and it was the most amazing thing I've ever done. So I'll be up here for a few minutes. If any of y'all, it's for women only. Sorry, you guys. There'll be another chance. Thank you.